American sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Rockets lost a basketball game last night, which they lose a lot more than they win. Oh, that's not a problem. There's nothing wrong with that because they're in the Victor sweepstakes. They're in the Scoot sweepstakes. But they gave up a ton of points to Sacramento, 140. This was on the heels after they gave up plus 150 in their previous game. They've given up nearly 300 points in their last two basketball games, and they were in regulation. 140 to the Kings, 153 to Oklahoma City in Oklahoma City.
Safe to say they have a 25-letter alphabet.
What does this mean?
There's no D in it.
Oh, goodness.
They are awful.
Rate the joke, 713-780-ESPN. Rate the pun, 713-780-3772. I can't believe I fell for it.
You did.
I'll be completely honest with you. I can't believe that I took the cheese. Yep. I can't believe that I took the cheese. Anyways, the Rockets' defense has been atrocious. It's been abysmal. Steven Silas is finally getting frustrated with it, which is interesting. Let's get to what you want to know what's really funny about this, by the way? Mm. Maybe it's not funny. Maybe it's sad. This is the first time I've noticed all year that the Houston Rockets did not post Steven Silas's postgame presser.
I noticed it as well.
First time, at least that I've noticed it. I can't say that I watched Steven Silas's postgame presser every single game, but they had it after Oklahoma City. They did not have it after yesterday's
game. I'm curious if AT&T Sportsnet ran it.
I couldn't tell you.
Right. That's one I wasn't watching, and I would definitely not have stuck through the end of that thing and the postgame.
Right.
So, sorry to my man Murph, but I'd be curious because as a journalist, you run that thing. As a team, I guess they're embarrassed by it or they don't want... Look, you're going to catch the strays no matter what. Enough people from media outlets are already reposting the clip.
I would imagine that AT&T ran it, if I had to guess.
I would think so, too.
713-780-3776. Let us know. I did not catch the postgame show. I had to go to Houston Round Ball Review, which they post all of the postgame press conferences. They cover basketball in Houston. They cover U of H, women's basketball, men's basketball. They cover
Chris
Rice.
Gardner?
Yeah, Chris Gardner. Yep. He does great work. So that's where I went to find it. I just searched Houston Round Ball Review on YouTube, and he has the 2-minute, 34-second press conference in its entirety as Steven Silas, because it wasn't at HoustonRockets.com whenever I looked this morning. I wonder why. Here was the three cuts we're going to play from this, and we're going to have some fun with it in our next segment. But here was the first one from Steven Silas talking about how everything defensively was bad.
Getting into the body, getting over the screen, being in help, sprinting the closeouts, doing what we're supposed to do, acting as if it doesn't matter. It matters. It matters. Disappointing. These are the lessons we have to learn, I guess, and all that stuff, but that's not right. What we did tonight on that floor was not right. It's not right.
Here's what I want to know, Blank.
He was Branhaming.
Why is it taking 54 games?
I was going to say, and here's the other thing that I took out of that. Where were you on all the other games that they've been doing this? And then secondly, if this is the lesson that you're supposed to learn, then teach it. And teach them not to do it again. And teach them what they should be doing that they're not doing so that they won't do it again. This is what we keep harping on. I'm tired of having to constantly set the prerequisite. Nice guy. Everybody's pulling for him. Seems like a really great dude. Didn't sign up for this. But guess what? You're locked into a contract paying you for this. So do your damn job and get your coaches to do it too. And if your general manager tells you not to do it, tell them screw you because you're going to get paid anyway. And you know more basketball. You forgot more basketball than your general manager knows. But stop beating around the bush and making yourself look awful in the process.
Here's another one from Steven Silas saying how this isn't what Rockets basketball is supposed to be.
I mean, they can score. This team can score. They can score. They're
Sacramento.
Right at the top of the league. But just letting guys just line up a wide open threes, like, no, we don't do that. We've had a stretch of this season, these last couple games, where this is not how we're supposed to play. And it's not doing all the things that we've been talking about all season long.
It's not. Have you, though?
You've been allowing it 54 games. This isn't Rockets basketball. What I've watched in 54 games... It might be accelerated a little bit last night. Obviously, you give up 140 points, although it was 153 two nights before. This two-game stretch is like the egregious end. It's the high end. But the Rockets brand isn't playing tremendous defense.
Let me tell you what Rockets basketball always was. And because as much as we knew, Les Alexander's signature quote was, I'm here to do two things. help the community, give back to the community, and win championships. And we knew that Rudy's, you know, most signature line was the heart of a champion. But guess what Rudy's line was every single day? Rockets basketball is good defense turns into easy baskets on offense. That's the way they ran their offense for years. Get out in transition, force a bad shot, get the best shot for you because you've got the defense on their heels. And they did it over and over and over again, and they did it really well. You have to have an identity on both sides of the ball. They have a zero identity on defense, and I'm not sure what the hell their identity is on offense either, except for isolation. And that's not a good identity to have as the only thing that they run. And when you watch them night in, night out, that's why I'm so critical of where is the coaching, because you can't be 54 games in and finally starting to realize they're not getting it. Uh-huh. You should have known right away they're not getting it. It's weird that when they win five straight home games or four straight home games, suddenly they understand how to rotate and how to switch and how to help. And then all of a sudden, when the losing streak commences and they go on a 10-game losing streak, it's because they forgot how to play defense? How do you forget how to play defense?
No, I think it's not a forget. It's very clear that he's lost his locker room.
No doubt.
And that this is a frustration of no matter what I say, no matter what I do, no matter what John Lucas does, everything we're trying, these children
sure
do not listen
but
to
that's
me.
That's why a coach is there, is to force the children to listen to you. Sure, sure.
I mean, but this is why he's doing what he's doing, too.
Yeah, I don't mind isolation basketball. Just one quick point, separate. Like, I'm fine with isolation basketball. I don't like the ISO Rockets ball because they're not isolating into matchups that they have an advantage
right
over.
Like, get look, a switch, exactly. Set a pick.
Like, if you want to have Jalen Green in isolation, okay, run a little bit of dribble handoff, a little bit of weave, and have a mismatch. Have the third best defender now defending Jalen Green because you're forcing the other team to mismatch or switch a little bit, creating the mismatch. They don't do that. They're like, here, Jalen Green, you go one-on-one against their best defensive player. We're going to clear out and watch you do it, and then it's going
to
fail.
And you've said this before, too. It can be one of the most effective ways to play NBA basketball mm-hmm. these days is isolation, but you have to run it the right way. And that means you have to think it through. The easiest offense in the world to defend is also bad isolation, because all they do is get the ball over half court in one guy's hands. He goes on the left or right hand wing. Everybody stands around and watches him, and the defense goes, well, we know who's shooting this one. Let's just go get him, and everything's going
to
be fine.
They're not working. They're not having to work defensively. Whereas you do a little bit of screens, a little bit of pick and pops, a little bit of just weave action, dribble handoffs, then they'll have to work a little bit, and you're creating a mismatch. One more on Steven Sauce. I think this is the best part. He says, look, we're not even trying.
They're not giving that effort on the defensive end. They're not getting after it like they're supposed to. They're not getting into their man and fighting over and helping each other. They're not doing what they're supposed to do.
I think Joe's the point that he made and that you were making too, Blankers, is what's happening here. And this, I think it's Steven Silas realizing that he's probably 30 games away from getting fired. We'll have the John Lucas conversation in just a moment. But this is Silas with the frustration mounting. The problem that I have with Silas in this front is, like, this was the aggression and the attitude and the energy that you needed to be spending on this team ever since it went young and you traded away James Harden, you traded away Russell Westbrook. And it shouldn't be to the cameras. It shouldn't be to the media. It should be in the practices when you're demanding Jalen Green to close out on a three-pointer. It should be in the practices where you're demanding Josh Christopher to rotate and just have his defensive rotations.
How about Silas, get back on defense when you miss a shot or don't get a call, right, which everyone on that team is a victim of doing.
So the Silas energy here, like, I understand it and I get it. I would say it's far too late, and it should have been focused on his players in practice, not in front of cameras that HoustonRockets.com didn't post.
This is also a CYA reaction. This is cover your ass because the seat's hot and you know everybody's coming at you. And this is you trying to show that you're not going to settle or stand for this anymore. Well, guess what? You've been standing for it the entire time. And part of it is, and I do get this, I want to make this very clear, he's handicapped by a general manager that is overruling him a lot and embarrassing him a lot by going through during practices and or in coaching sessions and overruling the coach to tell the player and or team what they need to do. And it gives no one any sense of direction. They don't know who the hell is saying what and where it's coming from. And it's harder than ever for these young kids to stay focused and dialed in. But that's part of the deal as a head coach that's established, where you say, this is still my team, and I know how to coach basketball, and this is what we need to do to get better. And if you don't think so, then you go out in the press and tell them it's your decision. Because otherwise, I'm taking all the heat. I'm going to take the fall for you, who is trying to tell me what to do and how to do my job. And that's a fact.
Yeah, or just bench the guy. And look, Silas might not feel he has the authority to do that, to bench the guy, But he's also not going to have any authority when he gets fired at the end of the season because the guys that he's not willing to bench, maybe it's coming from somebody higher above him, is not making that defensive rotation, is not making that closeout, is a huge piece of why you're giving up nearly 300 points in regulation in the last two games. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Dr. Dre's in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Dre?
What's up, fellas? Time to make a house call, man. This Steven Silas stuff has got my blood pressure boiling, you know. Joel, you stole a lot of my thunder. I feel Coach Silas is in a rock and a hard spot. You know, this is his first head coaching job for, you know, for being an assistant for, what, 18 to 20 years. And first head coaching gig, and he has an overbearing GM that's telling him what to do. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Stone is telling him who to play and how many minutes and controlling the lineups. You know, and of course he's taking the catching the strays for it, you know, not being able to control his own lineups. That's the only thing that makes sense to me because, you know, the players aren't listening to him, you know, and it also falls on Stone for not having at least two or three veteran players that are helpful to show these young kids how to play ball. And, you know, it's aggravating, and I think Coach Silas is getting a bad rap for it.
Well, I appreciate the call, Dre. Look, he signed up for this in the fact that he's getting paid. But other than that, he obviously got a bad bill of goods because he was expecting to have Russ and Harden. And I think to your point, one of the things that Stone is, he's feeling the heat right now, but he also is darn lucky that after John Wall was the appetizer, that he didn't get piled on by Carmelo and Chris Paul and even James Harden for everybody that thought that, you know, they were super tight. There are so many guys that if they followed right behind John Wall with their stories of the way the Rockets have been run in the last 3 or 4 years, it would make your head spin. And the fact that that is not how today's NBA. I've talked to several general managers because I know what's going on behind the scenes. So I talked to several general managers and general managers that used to be general managers in this league. I said, have you ever interrupted a practice or a coaching session with a player and a coach one-on-one to tell said player what to do right in front of the coach who's telling him something else? They said, we would never do that. We would never undermine our staff. There's a time and a place for a private meeting to talk about philosophy, but once the guys are on the floor with them laced up, that's when the coaches are supposed to do their job. They're not being allowed to do their job on a daily basis.
Part of that's the coach, though. Like, part of that
he's
is...
he's got to speak up, too.
Yeah. Like, you get a... Greg Popovich allowing that to happen?
No. Hell no.
That's what I mean. Like, the Steven Silas allowed that to happen.
That's another private conversation where you got to go,
right?
Hey, Rafael, we got to talk.
Yeah. And look, if it cost him his job, I'd rather lose my job doing that.
With integrity.
And even if it means I lose some money, then lose my job after this season by somebody else calling the
shots.
You
know what it does? It gets you your next job. Because if you don't do what you just said and you continue to do what Silas is doing, what other team in the league is going to hire you, especially if they got young players? They're going to go, you cannot do what we need to do with a young team, so you're not right for us. And it's going to cost him getting another head coaching job.
713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. John Lucas, everybody wants Silas gone. I don't think it makes sense. I think we need to have the John Lucas conversation on two fronts. And also, let's compare the Silas outrage to other great outrage coach rants that we've seen in the past. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, we're going to compare Silas's rants to some other really good coaching rants first, or in a little bit. Some reaction to this on the text line we'll get to as well. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Todd says, I don't think Silas is a good head coach, but I also think some of these kids aren't coachable. Look, I don't disagree with that. Like, a lot of times, whenever you need to demand, let's just say it's defense, you need to demand effort. Like, Silas yesterday was pleading to the media that this team needs more effort. You should have been doing that in practices at the start of the season 2 years ago. And maybe he was, and these players aren't coachable. Like, that happens all the time in the NBA, where players just aren't coachable, and they cost a coach his job, even though he is demanding that sort of stuff. But it's the head coach that gets fired, not the players. So it's just one of those things in the NBA where if you don't get the most out of your players, if you don't get effort out of your players, you're going to lose your job. It's just the facts of the story. Now, it depends on, like, how you're willing to go about that. Are you just going to ride out, you know, however many years, let the players basically, you know, call their shots, do what they want to do? Are you going to try to bring the absolute most out of them? And if James Harden wants you fired, James Harden gets you fired. Like, that's a choice that you have to make as an NBA head coach. Where I'm going to be tough on them, I'm going to be demanding on them, it might cost me my job because the players are more important than me, or you don't demand that stuff out of them, and you get fired in 2 years because your team's not very good.
This is the equivalent to what we were talking about when you go, and what do we say is the most, one of the most important positions in all of sports? It's the quarterback. And so when you're taking a quarterback in the draft, it's about how you develop him.
Sure.
And you develop him with coaching on a daily basis. And that's why we've been saying with D'Amico or whoever's the coach is going to be for a certain situation, you have to be there and be there in the long haul to develop the kid until he gets to a point where he can take the reins himself. They're doing a disservice right now to Jalen Green and so many of these young kids because they're not doing it on a daily basis. They're not developing these kids. They're rolling it out there and saying, hey, do your best, you know, make some shots, run up and down the floor, get yours when you get anybody in front of you you think you can take. And that's about the extent of it. And you need a guy as well that when we're talking about the right hire for the right situation with the front office, you need a guy that's willing to stand up to a Rafael Stone. Let's not forget, Rafael Stone hired Steven Silas. And part of the reason was Rafael Stone was trying to earn his stripes in this league and prove he knew what he was doing. He damn well wasn't going to hire a veteran coach that wasn't going to listen to his BS and was going to do the things that he was hired to do. He got a guy that is going to follow in line with what he wants because he's new at his job too in Steven Silas, and he wants to make sure the general manager is there for him. So it's a tough situation. If they do move on from Silas, the best move that Tillman can make is get a guy that isn't a puppet for Rafael Stone.
Right.
Get a guy, not necessarily a Sean Payton-esque type salary-wise and otherwise. You got to get a guy with an experienced guy that's been there, done that to say, nope, not going to do that now that my name is on this team. I'm going to have this team play the way you hired me to make them play.
That's what 8755 said. You just need a coach in there that will make players accountable. Like, lack of accountability can make things miserable. There's no integrity, not even a case care in the world. It's me, 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 and no team. That's why I say Caserio is a better GM than Stone. Nick knows how to take a back seat, do his job. We'll see. And Stone is overbearing and wanting to be a coach as well. He has to go even though he has found good talent. Now, the Rockets haven't really been too concerned about their win-loss record. That's one thing that I'm willing to give the Rockets credit for, is that, hey, if you're going to go with this rebuild, you go all in with your rebuild. Like, that's the best way to achieve success in the NBA. If you're, you know, where the Rockets were after the James Harden era, that you need to go all in. You have to go 2 feet into the embrace the suck, if you will, for the Houston Rockets. And they've been willing to do that. That's why the John Lucas conversation to me isn't really one that I'm willing to have. I'm keeping Steven Silas through the rest of the year. Would this team win more games with John Lucas as the head coach? Yeah, they probably would than Steven Silas.
But here's the caveat on that. Luke was brought into this organization by Rafael.
Uh-huh.
And Rafael, Luke knows that too.
Okay.
So if Luke gets the job, it has to be on an interim basis. Because if Luke is the guy, Rafael still feels like he can pull the strings.
That's fine. But the two concerns that I would have of why I wouldn't make John Lucas the head coach, one of them is because I think you win more games. And I don't want the Rockets to win more games, quite right. honestly. And then the second part of this is, what if John Lucas does a really good job? What if John Lucas all of a sudden makes this team look somewhat decent? That it's a far cry from what we've seen over the last two games. And then John Lucas has this team playing pretty decent basketball. Now you might be compelled to give the job to John Lucas.
You could. And look, I love Luke, and he's a great dude. And the whole reason why he got back into this is because he hadn't been in it for so long that this was an opportunity he wasn't sure he was going to get again. And he got in, and he obviously was hired by the GM, so there's a lot of trust there, because otherwise you got a guy on the bench in Lionel Hollins that's coached more recently that you could have put into the interim position whenever Silas misses. But Luke is there for a reason, and it's because Rafael handpicked him. So that's great for now, but if you want to develop this team long term, I think that there's so much more than John Lucas. You need a guy coming in from the outside with his own clear thoughts and vision, a guy that can honestly assess this roster too, and then create the structure from the rotation to the offense and defense that's going to be best suited for the roster that you have. And I don't think they're doing that right now. They're trying to develop guys to prove they drafted the right guys. But then other guys, they're almost intentionally, like a Ty Washington. Why are you keeping him down and sitting him? He had a 50-piece in the G League, but yet he sits and Deshaun Nix is playing.
Look, I like Ty more than Deshaun Nix, but I don't think, I think Nix had a 50-piece in a G League game too, though.
I don't think he did.
I think he did.
I just think that from a guy that you took, I don't want to say wasted, but you used a first-round pick on this kid. It's the same thing with Josh Christopher. You know you're losing games anyway. You need to see what they can be. You got to have them out there.
I agree.
Because it isn't practice and it isn't just walkthroughs. This is the time when you can really tell what the kid's made of and if he's made to be a guy on your team or not, and then make decisions. You can't be playing these guys that cost you nothing to go get that were G League players because you're what? All of a sudden you're trying to win a game?
How do you evaluate, Joel, the coaching in the NBA? Because I question... Like, when you say, like, get someone to fix it, like, we all think D'Amico is going to fix the Texans, right? But, like, these NBA teams, there doesn't seem to be this pipeline that's special for coaches, right? Like, Silas was supposed to be the next guy. You know, Chauncey Billups and Terry Stotts, they're both failing in Portland. You know, Jason Kidd, it seems like it's a little bit better in Dallas right now. Doesn't matter. Like, every time a new head coach gets hired anywhere in the NBA, it feels like they just fail. So then people are trying to go outside the box with Chauncey Billups and Steve
no,
Nash.
Don't.
So
this is not that situation, though, Joe. This is a situation where, and I've said over and over again, Quinn Snyder would be my first choice.
Definitely. Him and Stotts, I think, would be my
second. And Terry Stotts was going to be my second. Because
and
these
Sam
are guys.
Cassell?
These are guys. Nope. Sammy's not. I love Sammy to death. I don't think this is the right situation for Sam, especially with his first coaching opportunity. This is a thing. This is where an experienced coach comes in and goes, if it's Stotts, I've worked for and with George Karl. I've worked for some of the best general managers in the league. And the same thing can be said of Quinn Snyder with the guys he's worked with, including a guy the Rockets should have hired in Dennis Lindsay, where you can go into those meetings and say, look, I know how to coach basketball, and I know how it best works between front office and coaching. You worry about putting the groceries on the table, I'll worry about serving dinner. And that's the way that it's going to work, and that's the way it's like when Lovey said Casario wasn't going to be in the headsets anymore. It takes a veteran coach, I don't care what his record says, it takes a guy that's been through the wars to be able to put his foot down and say, you're not doing that on my time that you hired me for.
And
I think those are the coaches that would do that.
And unlike the NFL, it actually feels like there's a better success rate the second time around for a lot of NBA coaches. Like, we're seeing that kind of like Budenholzer, like the coach in Phoenix, Monty Williams.
Monty Williams.
Like, it was not great in New Orleans or Charlotte, whatever he was part of. But then it's going much better in Phoenix. It feels like these guys, like, they get opportunities when they're young. It's kind of a disaster. They go back to assistant coaching, and then they figure it out.
But he learned from it.
And that's where, like, I don't think it's crazy. I think Silas can't be successful down the road somewhere else. I just don't think
I don't
he
disagree
can
with
here.
That, per se. I think Silas is better made for a veteran team.
Sure.
And that's what he thought he was going to be doing here. But I think that it can be tarnished no matter what he's done in this league, and no one is trying to take away the 17, 18 years as an assistant coach. But this is David Culley and the fact that he was an assistant for this long for a reason. But now he gets his first opportunity, and he can't even spread his wings to do what he wants because he's being controlled by the front office. And with every loss, with every 20-point loss, with every bit of where everybody that's a common fan can point out, well, they're not playing any defense, and your coach is verifying that, and you know they're not playing any offense, and these young guys aren't getting any better, there's not a whole lot of teams signing up going, that's the guy I want to coach my team.
No, I like the retread, though, the retread head coach, because I do think that there are valuable lessons that they learn. Maybe, like, you know, I'm going to stick up to my way of doing things to the GM. 5-7-4-2, so the Rockets fire Silas, who would want this job if Stone is still the GM, a Nuggets fan from Denver, but follow both teams. Like, you guys have mentioned good names, but it would take Rafael Stone, if he's still the GM, and I think that it can still work with him as the GM. It would take Stone telling them in the interview process, look, you're the basketball voice of this organization. I'm not telling you minutes. I'm not telling you your rotation. I'm not going to tell you how to do things. This is your way. I'm just here to collect the talent.
Yeah, look, and I don't think that's going to happen because from the get-go, and again, trying to prove himself, Rafael wanted to be the face. He wanted to be in front of all the cameras because no one knew who he was. And he wants to be the guy that's the architect of everything they do. It's just, again, much like Casario when I said how parallel the two franchises are, he over-inserted himself. He inserted him in places that no other general manager would dare do. And with that, he took the credibility away from his coach with his own players. And to Joe's point, he lost the team in the process doing that. And that's what you can't afford to do as you continue to try and groom this roster full of young players.
I was wrong on Knicks' career high in the G League, but guess how many it was?
35.
35 was Knicks' career high in the G League.
Okay.
Not too bad. No, but it's not 52. 713. Actually, I think it was 53 for Ty Ty. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. We'll move back our 130 mock draft, making mock drafts great again. Let's listen to some of the past coaching rants in the history of sport and compare it to Steven Silas. 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Rockets lost basketball yesterday. They've given up nearly 300 points in two games in regulation.
Is that a lot?
It's many.
It's not good.
I'm not, like, I understand that the Rockets aren't trying to win games. It's in the best interest to get a top two pick.
To the point, though, that you made earlier, Jeremy, that we've made previously, it is worth noting, this is why, for all the people clamoring to fire Silas now, it's exactly the wrong time to do it, because he's doing exactly what you need. You know that the commissioner's office and Adam Silver has said, we will penalize anybody trying to tank, especially this year with Wembanyama coming out. All you got to do is keep everything in place and let them keep doing what they're doing. They're doing their job in terms of getting you in that lottery where you need to be.
Yeah, you're not moving on from Silas. That said, if I ran an NBA team and a coach gave up 150 points in a regulation game, I'd think long and hard about it. He had a rant, Silas, unacceptable, we stink, no effort, blah, 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 50-something games into the NBA. Hey, chill out, the computer is freaking out here. So Joe George pulled up some of the old best coaching rants that exist. Hit us with what you got, Joe George. Or here's Silas first, right? Let's go with a Steven Silas first to see where the baseline's at and how it compares up to other ones. Here is Silas again from last night, not HoustonRockets.com, courtesy of Houston Roundball Review.
They're not giving that effort on the defensive end. They're not getting after it like they're supposed to. They're not getting into their man and fighting over and helping each other. They're not doing what they're supposed to do.
All that stuff does matter. I mean, positioning, things like that. All right, so that was Steven Silas last night. Here's Joe George's first coaching rant that he has pulled up for us.
And that was a disgraceful performance, in my opinion. We threw that game. We gave it away by doing that. We gave them the friggin' game. In my opinion, that sucked. What's that? Playoffs? Don't talk about it. Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs? I just hope.
I forgot that first part of it. I couldn't figure out how that was until the playoffs part.
Oh, I knew it.
It sounded like a Kennedy to me.
He almost killed me one night.
Mora or Kennedy?
Mora.
Somebody else got Kennedy, both of them.
Yeah.
All right.
Mora almost got me drunk driving.
Really?
Yeah. They had their training
camp. You should have taken a charge, man. You'd be a millionaire.
No, they had the training camp at our school, and I was working for the Saints summer. And this was at night, and this was one of the off nights, and the coaches went out and had a few too many, and he was lost in downtown La Crosse, Wisconsin, and almost took me out in a crosswalk blowing a red light.
You should have taken the charge. You'd be a millionaire.
I'd be alive.
It's a risk I'd be willing to take, especially sitting over here. Here's another one that Joe George pulled. Great coaching rants.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports.
That's the great thing about sports.
Herm.
Do you think Herm, whenever he was saying you play to win the game, would eventually think that he would get sabotaged by his own staff giving away the game plan coaching college football?
Is that part of it?
That's you sabotage in order to climb the coaching ranks in this game.
You hire your ex-players to recruit when they're not supposed to.
Hey, at least that's trying to win the game.
Yeah, that's true.
The assistant's giving away the game plan. Not a great look. All right, what else you got for us, Joe George?
I mean, the Bears are what we thought they were. They're what we thought they were. We played them in preseason. Who the hell takes a third game in a preseason like it's bull? We played them in the third game. Everybody played three quarters. The Bears are who we thought they were. And that's why we took the damn field. Now, if you want to crown them, then crown their ass. But they are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook.
We took the field because we thought they were. That's why we took the field. We let them off the hook. Rest in peace, Denny Green.
Mm-hmm.
Rest in peace. That was one of my favorite ones. That's probably one of
Joe, by the way, after further review, the Bears still suck.
That's probably one of Joe's favorite ones,
too. They went to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they were crowning them. Okay. Everybody was crowning them. They went to the Super Bowl with Sexy Rexy.
How'd they win?
They didn't win.
That's right. That's the point.
There is no how did they win, because the win did not
happen. I just wanted Joe to answer the question with exactly how he did. They lost. And they haven't been relevant since.
I like this NFC North rivalry.
Yeah, but maybe
we had one with Brendan.
But one of the most electric moments in Super Bowl history, though. You can't deny that.
Sexy Rexy? Fridge?
No, Devin.
Oh, Devin Hester.
Starting the Super Bowl that way?
The second greatest kick returner in NFL history.
Stop.
How'd they finish it?
Second best. That's not bad. That's
based
good.
On what?
Based on Marcus Jones being the first, go Cougs.
He's not there yet.
He's pretty good.
He's special.
Whenever we fire Joe George, we're going to have to find a Minnesota Viking fan.
Just complete the deal.
Actually, I think I got one for you. I think
really?
I got one for you, yeah.
You grooming your replacement?
Oh, what was his name?
Chris Tubbs.
Yeah.
Chris Tubbs. He actually moved back to Minnesota so he could still follow the Vikings.
Skull. All right. What's the next one you got for us, Joe George? Great coaching rants, similar to Steven Silas.
As he does everything right and may not play as well on Saturday. And you let us make that decision. That's why I don't read the newspaper. Because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage. Attacking an amateur athlete for doing everything right. And then you want to write articles about guys that don't do things right and downgrade them, the ones that do make plays. Are you kidding me?
Gundy's got some. Gundy's hair.
But that wasn't the best
press.
Gundy.
It was pretty good. It was pretty good.
The best Gundy.
I'm a man! Minutes. But I think that was it. I think that
was
the
part of it?
Yeah, that was part of it.
Yeah,
that,
I didn't realize how long that tangent
he would not,
was.
I've heard that he'll pull credentials like that. Like
is that right?
Yeah, if you don't cross Gundy,
that's quick. A Tad Brown.
It's
move.
Quick, yep. Very, very quick. There, and still,
I'm a man. I'm a grown man. I'm 40 years old.
That was that one because he was talking about how they were attacking Bobby Reed, who Bobby Reed went to North Shore, by the way. I think he transferred to Texas Southern, if memory serves. All right, last one that Joe George has for us. Great coaching rants that are way better than Steven Silas, if we're being honest.
Get back out of it. I turn and look. There's a little kitty cat in our kitchen. So I said, what are you doing in here, little kitty cat? By that time, the cat turns, tries to get back out. That screen won't go that way. Cat starts going, meow, all crazy. And I told our players, we need more dogs. Bo's barking in the back. I have to go shut Bo up. Mel's like, what's going on? I said, it's a cat in the house. Cat in the house? I said, yeah, there's a cat in the house. So I told our players, I tried to let it out the front door. Meow, meow. The cat's still going crazy in there. And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, I'm looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog.
Need a dog.
Be
You're a dog. You're a dog. I'm a dog. Bunch of dogs.
That one's just bizarre.
I wouldn't have known that one if I would have known it, but I wouldn't have been able to name the school if you didn't tell me.
Coastal Carolina.
Coastal Carolina. Now, I remember the rant. I remember what the guy looks like. He's kind of a skinny guy.
Yeah,
he kind of looks like a cat.
Porn stash.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't have
Did
told
he have
you
a mullet?
School.
No, short hair.
Okay, because the Gundy mullet is always what got me. I thought that guy might have one, too.
Did Gundy have a mullet, though, when he went through the I'm a Man, I'm 40 chant?
It was like the early stages.
It was the early stages with a visor, I think.
Yes.
That mullet he was rocking 2 or 3 years ago was next level.
Yes, it was.
That was incredible. I loved it. I mean, business up front, party in the back, just like a Saturday night in Stillwater, Oklahoma, down at Eskimo Joe's.
Yeah, business in the front, party in the back, overrated all over. Mike Gundy.
Not wrong.
Yeah, but Oklahoma State's one of the best programs in Oklahoma.
If you befriend
Big 12,
if you befriend the old guy with all the money, you're gonna be all right.
Be a dog. Yeah, he's gone though.
He passed away.
I heard he lost a lot of his
T-Boone Pickens.
Yeah, he lost a lot in the market. I heard.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. 7-1.
I'm sure he didn't lose that much.
I heard it was pretty significant,
but he's still making it. He had more money than
that's true. Yeah, I mean, he had billions and then lost like a billion. 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. We're making mock drafts great again. In the latest mock draft that we have to talk about, our very own Lance Zierlein 1.0. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Lance Zierlein has delivered his first mock draft, 1.0. We're making mock drafts great again. We're taking looks at these mock drafts all the way up until April 27th. I'll say this to start with Lance's mock, which I love to see Lance's mock, is that his is the most, how would I say this? I don't want to say egregious.
Houston friendly?
No. I would say that I see players in this mock draft that are going way earlier than I've seen and way later than I've seen. Okay. And I think that that's probably because Lance breaks down all of these players and he's usually ahead of the curve, honestly. Because, like, why? Like, he has the, he has Jalen Hyatt, the receiver from Tennessee, who I've seen like second, third round in mock drafts. He has the Texans picking him at number 12. Ooh. That's as high as I've seen Jalen Hyatt picked. But why does Lance have Jalen Hyatt there? Because he's watched him play like every single snap in his collegiate career.
He's very high on him.
And then how do like most of these mock draft people, they react based on other mock drafts and then how other people like assess their play. They don't go in there and watch them all. So when Lance has Jalen Hyatt as high as I've seen him at number 12, it's because he has seen Jalen Hyatt play all, you know, every snap that he's played at Tennessee. Whereas all these mock draft experts, the guys that produce all these mock drafts, they'll now see Jalen Hyatt and move him up in their mock drafts without ever watching him play a snap.
Yeah, and Lance says at the top, too, that he's doing some of this based on need. And like, and where he thinks they would go, it's based on how he evaluates them, based on team need. But what I do think is, I guess it's an indication that like Jalen Hyatt's his number one wide receiver, I think is interesting because there's not clear cut. Like with the wide receiver position, we've seen Quentin Johnson, we've seen Jordan Addison,
yep.
Like Jackson Smith and Jigba, still some guys' top wide receivers. Jalen Hyatt, like
that's the first I've seen Jalen Hyatt as the top wide receiver.
Yeah,
from anybody's stuff.
The only thing I do know is it's not Johnston from TCU anymore.
Well, look at all the like. That's kind of like the biggest takeaway I had from Lance's mock is that I've seen some players as high as I've ever seen them, and I've seen some players as low as I've ever seen them. Like Jalen Carter at number one, that's not that high, and I hope that Jalen Carter is the number one pick because I have a ticket on Jalen Carter being the number one pick. But Tyree Wilson at five, kind of high. Christian Gonzalez at number six, the corner from Oregon, kind of high. Drew Sanders, the linebacker from Arkansas, I saw him like late first, early second. He has him going number eight. Keon White, the Georgia Tech defensive end, number nine. You start Jalen Hyatt, we just mentioned him at number 12, as high as I've seen him. He has Luke Musgrave as his first tight end, which is radical, quite frankly, because Michael Mayer's been the top tight end like on every single mock draft we've seen. Osiris Torrance, who's the guard for Florida, seen him as a late first rounder. He has him 16th. And then back end as well, Anthony Richardson. We were talking about Anthony Richardson being a top 10 pick. A lot of mocks have Anthony Richardson in the top 10. Lance has him going 19. He's got Quentin Johnson going 22. He's got Dalton Kincaid going 24. And then he has Jordan Addison, who we've seen as the first wide receiver taken in a lot of mocks going number 31. So
Addison was the guy that they had the ESPN had going to the Texans.
Yeah, the first like Addison, I've seen a lot of places the first receiver taken in the NFL draft. Lance has him going 31, and I'm not saying that Lance is wrong or that Lance is like you know way off on this because it might turn out where Lance is closer than any other mock draft. I think Lance is a little bit ahead of the curve, honestly, because again, some players that are I've seen as high and some players I've seen as low as on Lance's mock now. From a Houston Texan point of view, I think many people would be happy with this draft from a Houston Texan point of view. Jalen Carter's off the board at number one. What does Houston want to see at number two if Jalen Carter's off the board at number one?
What does Houston want to see at number two?
The city of Houston, the fan base.
Bryce Young.
Absolutely. And that's what Lance has the Texans projected to do, is that they take Bryce Young with the number two pick. Jalen Carter goes number one. There's no issues there. The fan base is very happy. Even me, who's a Levis guy, if the Texans end up with Bryce Young, I'm going to be happy. I'm cool with any of the top two quarterbacks, in my opinion, Levis and Bryce Young. If it's Bryce Young, great. Let's figure out how this is going to work out. If it's Will Levis, everybody's going to be mad. I'll be happy. Great. Let's figure out how it's going to work out. He has the Colts staying at four and taking C.J. Stroud, which I would be very happy with because I think C.J. Stroud's the third best quarterback in this draft. And then you go down a few spots, Levis, he has him going number seven to Vegas, which, you know, a few weeks ago when I said that Will Levis is going to be in the conversation to be a top five pick, everybody thought I was crazy and people were pointing me to Lance. Lance says otherwise. Well, Lance has him going number seven. That's in the conversation of a top five pick. Go a little further down, and we just talked about Jalen Hyatt. Jalen Hyatt, Lance has the number 12 pick to the Houston Texans. I think people would be right now would be surprised by this because no one's thought of Jalin Hyatt, quite frankly, as the top receiver in this draft. People love the idea of going receiver for Bryce Young at number 12. A lot of times people have talked about Jordan Addison. People have talked about Quentin Johnston. I'm not sure anybody in the city's had the Jalin Hyatt at number 12 conversation.
I would agree with that. And the only thing that I would say in terms of people that do multiple mock drafts is the first one is definitely like a precursor, setting the table for conversation and fodder. And as we get closer to the draft, they'll dial it back to where they probably thought all along, unless guys' workouts really change their opinion. Because the first one is always to get reaction.
I don't think Lance's is.
Okay.
I think Lance trusts
and I haven't
his
seen
eyes.
Lance's like I've seen, you know, when Mel comes out with his first one and Todd McShay and those guys. The first one, they're always looking to stir the pot, to get people excited, agitated, talking about it. And then as we get closer to the gap, the draft, they kind of get more realistic.
Yeah. I think Lance, a lot of times when he puts his mocks together, I think he trusts his eyes far more than he trusts other people's mocks. Because Jalin Hyatt, again, number one receiver off the board, is a bit of a surprise. 0857, I think, sums it up really well. His mock draft is the most non-consensus. That's a great way to put it. Now, if Jalin Hyatt's the pick, how do you feel about that for the Houston Texans? Pairing him with Bryce Young in this scenario.
I don't mind. Look, I like getting whoever you like the best at receiver after you take whoever you like the best at quarterback because you're addressing the biggest need, I think, on the team. So when I look at those things, I like them. I think one of the things that I would have as a concern for Hyatt is the way they were playing with Hooker was the fact that basically he just said go routes and he just would throw it up there and guys would, like Hyatt would go underneath him and get him. He can high point a football.
They would do a lot of receiver screens and stuff like that too.
But my biggest concern, because he's fast, but my biggest concern would be route running and route trees. But if he can run routes and they just didn't do that to that level at Tennessee, that's another bonus. But look, I trust the guys like Lance that are looking at tape every day to figure it out. Just get the guy you want. Be in the position to get the best receiver on the board, and then please take him.
I've seen a good amount of Jalin Hyatt. I really like him as a player.
Okay.
Surprised that he is the number one receiver that Lance has being taken in the mock. That said, I think all these receivers, like when we compare them relative to other receivers that have been drafted, let's say the last 3 years, I think they're all second and third tier. Like there's not a Garrett Wilson. There's not a Chris Olave in this draft. Not a Drake London.
Who is your top?
Top receiver?
Yeah.
I think it's this is one of those things, too, where you're kind of drafting based on scheme. Because I thought of Jalin Hyatt kind of being close to that Quentin Johnston, Jordan Addison. I think Jackson Smith and Jibba probably gets overlooked a lot because he didn't play this year. Jamar Chase didn't play his final year either. He opted out. I'm not calling Jackson Smith and Jibba Jamar Chase, but I'm calling him maybe potentially the best receiver of this draft. I think that Hyatt's in that conversation. I really do. And seeing that Lance has him as his top receiver kind of verifies that. So those are your top four. I don't want the Texans to reach on receiver based on them drafting a quarterback at number two.
I'd rather wait.
Or maybe the second round.
That's what I'm saying, because I think a guy like, if you look at his stats, and sometimes I feel like from what I've watched, and I'm not some trained eye, but I feel like it's hard to really get a grasp of what he was at Boston College. But I think someone like Zay Flowers, he seems like a special talent because his quarterback play was just so garbage most of the time that it's like, how do you really – but it looks like it was so positive with bad quarterback play that you think it's going to translate really well. I know
– I've seen him comp to Antonio Brown,
I'll say it for you.
On the field.
Tank.
See, there was two names I was going to say, and those were the two names I was going to say.
I think Tank Dell, he's Darnell Mooney, but I think he can be better.
I love Tank. Obviously, go Cougs, but I love his game. And what he did at the Senior Bowl verified that. So, like, to your point, Joe, I'm with you. Like, I'd rather take best player available at number 12. And let's say you even reach for Zay or Tank Dell, because Tank I've seen go into the second round. I think for sure that Zay Flowers will be a second-round pick as well. Would you rather have Jalin Hyatt and then your second-round pick, or would you rather have best player available at number 12 and then Zay Flowers and Tank Dell, even if it's a reach? I prefer the latter.
Well, and that's the thing. That's when you start looking at your whiteboard and your tiers. If they're all on equal tiers, then you're not going to be married to a name. You're going to be married to the ability and the rating and the grade that puts them all on the same level. And if you can assure yourself of getting one of those guys, then you have to consider that. But then you also have to take into consideration, are you trying to draft wide receiver one? Or are you trying to draft a receiver that's going to be a good, productive wide receiver for you?
Because what's the difference, though?
I think the tiers. I think if you've got a tier one guy,
you're talking about the scenario.
Yeah, I think 12 would be where you get a true, in your belief, wide receiver one.
See, I don't think that exists in this draft.
Okay.
I really don't.
And I don't, I can't, I haven't looked at it that close to be able to say, and all the guys film, to be able to say that I do.
Right.
I think there's a lot of guys that could be successful in this league. But if you don't, even if, so if you say you don't think there's a wide receiver one, then you have to gauge the value of it and the demand for it.
Right.
If there's a lot of teams that are going to be scrambling for wide receiver, which I don't know that they are, if you go by what Lance and other guys are saying, there's going to be plenty of receivers sliding,
right,
then you're probably better off just taking one of the guys you could get with the second pick of the second round.
Let's look at, like, Hyatt and in the first few picks behind him. Like, would you rather have Hyatt, Brian Branch, who's kind of a nickelback safety at Alabama, Broderick Jones, tackle at Georgia, Musgrave, the tight end from Oregon State, or Osiris Torrance? Those are the four picks immediately after. For me, I'd rather go Brian Branch, make him
a safety.
I like
Branch.
Have two really good safeties with D'Amico Ryans.
I like Branch.
That's where I'm going.
We've said we like the idea of tight end, but there's three of them. And again, if they're all on an equal tier, there's a good chance one's going to slide a little bit. You could trade up if you wanted to or had to. But as you see the demand on other positions, you have to gauge with those three tight ends pretty much head and shoulders above everybody else. If one or two of those guys start sliding, or you think that they're going to slide based on what you think the tendencies are, the teams drafting between your two picks, then you play it accordingly. So
Dallas, some people are asking who Dallas takes. They take Deontay Banks, the Maryland corner in Lance's draft. I've never heard of him, if I'm being completely honest. And then Bijan Robinson, people like to know where he falls. He falls down to Buffalo at 27. That would be...
That'd be a steal.
Amazing
for the Bills.
Fix. Yeah, amazing find for Buffalo. I don't think he gets that far, though.
713. I think the Cowboys look wide receiver.
Potentially. But it goes back to who you. Who,
right, which, true.
Yeah. 713-780-3776. Cash it or trash it. What are the hot takes, the overreactions we've had? And we're trying to sell to the other two. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.